This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. As tensions continue to grow between Indiana lawmakers and teachers over pay, educators are now grappling with a new requirement tied to their licenses. A law that took effect in July makes Indiana the first state to require career awareness training for teachers who use the most common license renewal process. The goal is to help students start thinking about how their education will help them in the job market. But some criticize the move, saying lawmakers didn't seek input from teachers themselves. What do you think of this new requirement? Is Indiana breaking new ground, or is it an unnecessary obligation? Let us know on social media. We especially want to hear from you if you are or were a teacher. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Joining me now are our reporters working on this story, Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks. Hi, Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
And Jeannie Lindsay. Jeannie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So a new requirement for teacher licenses in Indiana involves something called career awareness training. Jeannie, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So teachers in Indiana have a couple of ways that they can renew their licenses. And kind of one of the most common ways is through a professional growth point or PGP plan. It basically says teachers need about 90 credit hours of professional development in order to renew their license. And this career awareness thing makes it so part of that has to be focused on career awareness. So they can do professional development focused on promoting career navigation for students, or they can talk about local or economic needs and how to basically share that information with their kids. Or they can do something like an externship, which is what Justin and I have reported on, teachers kind of figuring out what that means. And basically it's to connect, you know, careers and real world industries and workplaces to kids in the classroom through their teachers.
So these are things that maybe some of them were doing before, but they haven't had to, right?
Right. So a lot of, you know, workforce, career technical education teacher types, you know, have had this sort of awareness and this training. But this now covers most teachers in Indiana. It doesn't apply to charter school licenses or CTE teacher licenses, but it says every teacher that renews through this PGP plan has to have a chunk of those points, 15 of them to be exact, focused on career awareness type training.
So for a while, this will mostly apply to new teachers, I guess, but all teachers have to renew their license every once in a while, right?
Yeah, so the way that it is right now, we had a wave of teachers renew their licenses before this career awareness licensure rule went into effect. And teacher licenses in Indiana are every 5 or 10 years, depending on what type of license you get. So every 5 years now, teachers will have to focus on this, or every 10 years. It just kind of depends on when they renewed and when their license is going to expire.
Justin, can you talk about how the requirement works in practice?
Sure, yeah. So in practice, there's three ways teachers can get those 15 out of 90 hours. Number one, and this is the one that has gotten a lot of attention, is externships. So that would mean that you have to do 15 hours within 5 years of an externship in a local company. And what that looks like in most places is, you know, let's say, like, let's take the Elkhart example. You live near an RV factory or the RV industry, or maybe even Toyota manufacturing plant is big, you know, where you live. You might go into one of those manufacturing plants and learn what they do and learn how they do it and talk to some of the leaders there at the manufacturing plant about what they need. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be about 15 hours, and most teachers do that in the summer. Two other ways you can kind of fulfill that 15 out of 90 hour requirement is doing professional development in something called, quote, career navigation. No one's exactly sure what that means. Third way is to talk about the future current economic needs of community, state, nation, and globe. And again, that's also a little wishy-washy. But at the same time, you know, the way that the bill is written, people at the actual, you know, principals or superintendents, they can decide what that means to them. So there's no clear definition, but there, you know, everyone can kind of make up their own definition, and that is how that will get decided.
So if everyone can make up their own definition, it kind of sounds like a Wild West approach. And I would imagine proponents of this, arguments from them, it seems like this is just a practical thing, like this is something that is just a good idea, is something to talk about in the classroom. But Jeannie, what's the reaction been like from teachers since this was passed?
Yeah, so a lot of the confusion around it was just that confusion. And so that kind of resulted in, I would not be afraid to categorize it as a little bit of a panic. The Indiana State Teachers Association sent out a notice to their members shortly after the law was passed, basically urging a lot of teachers to renew their licenses or start the process before the law went into effect, effectively making it so they could avoid the new career awareness part. And so, just like I said earlier, there was just a massive number of teachers. Indiana has more than 72,000 licensed teachers in the state. Now, not all of them practice necessarily, and some of them will get certified or renew their licenses through, you know, college courses or something called a national board certification. But most teachers in Indiana use the PGP plan. And according to the State Department of Education, this summer, ahead of the law going into effect, the career awareness rules, they had nearly 51,000 of Indiana's, you know, just more than 72,000 teachers go to renew. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how widespread some of the, you know, concerns were about this, because they rushed to beat this deadline so they wouldn't have to worry about it yet, because they didn't really know how to fulfill that.
What about the checks on this process? And it sounds to me like teachers could just sign something or say something that says they're going to do this, and then to their best ability they will. But it doesn't really sound like there's official literature or worksheets or things like that, or tests that are being given to make sure that this is happening. Am I correct in that assumption?
So ultimately, on the local level, there will be, you know, some decision making power through superintendents and school principals about what will fulfill the requirement. But one of the things that was really hard about this was the guidance from the state, you know, the people who were supposed to be setting the parameters or telling schools how their teachers would, you know, check this box, so to speak. That was kind of where the confusion was, is they didn't really know what exactly the state wanted and you know, saw this playing out as. So that was some of the hardship right there. I think you kind of nailed it.
But it sounds to me like local officials, like local school district officials, are being given the freedom to say, okay, well, this is what it means to us, and so this is how we're gonna handle it.
I'm gonna chime in real quick. I think part of the intention with that was for it to be local control. It was the idea of the state government saying, we don't want to quote unquote mandate what you do on your local level. We don't want to create a one size fits all type approach in case your industry is wildly different from another industry. So they tried to make that sort of, you know, they tried to spin that as sort of a local control thing where you could make this up, you know, for what fit your district. But a lot of people just want a little bit of guidance, I think. I think they want a little, they're you know, I don't want to, not in a negative way, but they want their hand held a little bit to kind of be shown, what are you expecting from us so that we can actually do that to the full purpose of the intent.
So Justin, then now that the requirements here, is everyone still figuring out how to implement it? Has it gone smoothly, or are there examples of districts that have done something specific?
Yeah, so as far as I can tell, there's been some good examples, but they're a little bit scattered. They're not totally widespread. One example that I saw and that I put in our piece was here in South Bend, the South Bend Regional Chamber of Commerce. In fact, they had been planning on doing a teacher externship program long before this bill was even passed. They had a little bit of grant money sitting aside to do this. And so they had this program already created, the bill was passed, and they thought, let's do this. Let's kind of be the first to try to sort of try this. And they actually followed, they researched a lot of other states and what other states have done, and other programs around and other locations have done to make this work. And they decided that it would be a three-day-long program or three-day-long externship. And then before the externship, they would have one day where they would kind of do an introduction and say, what do you hope to get out of this? And then a debrief at the end to say, what will you bring into your classroom now? And then I believe they even, in a couple months from now, they plan on coming back together for the teachers to talk about what they've actually done in their classrooms, you know, how they've actually used this, what's worked and what hasn't worked, so that the teachers can sort of learn and grow from each other. So that's been one good example. Some other things I've heard of, according to the governor's workforce cabinet, teachers in LaPorte, Michigan City, they met with some of their local leaders to talk about the local economy. And there's also been some educator boot camps that local chamber of commerces have done, which look very similar to the externships. But again, most of those things were done or were kind of conceived totally separate from this bill. They weren't necessarily spurred by the bill. They just happened to fit sort of these requirements of the bill.
Jeannie, you shared some of the reaction from teachers. What about the rest of the school system? How have superintendents and other leaders reacted to this so far?
Right. So one of the school superintendents we talked to about this was saying they just wished that there was, you know, some more funding behind this to help kind of support this connection, this sort of training. But it kind of all comes back to, you know, the lack of you know, guidance that a lot of people have been feeling around this. So they just wished that, you know, there was some more clarity about this and also some more support from the state. But some people have also said, you know, that the state shouldn't really be telling, you know, teachers that they need to include this in their training, but, you know, maybe incentivizing businesses to work with schools directly, you know, to forge that bond there instead of putting another thing for teachers to take care of on top of it. So the school superintendent we spoke with, you know, urged his teachers to just renew their licenses ahead of the deadline so they could kind of have that settled. And while they were figuring it out and the dust clears a little bit, by the time it comes back around, they'll have a little bit more support, a little bit better understanding of, you know, how to do this in a really meaningful way to really get at the root of you know, what pretty much everybody agrees on. And that's, you know, benefiting students by increasing, you know, their opportunities and connections for local careers and industry.
Of course, Indiana Public Broadcasting will continue to keep an eye on this. Reporter Jeannie Lindsay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Justin Hicks, thanks for your reporting.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Up next, more about the mandate for career awareness training in Indiana schools. We'll hear from educators, lawmakers, business people, and we hope to hear from you, too. What do you think of this requirement? Is it another hassle on the heap for teachers or just good common sense? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 2 minutes. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we talk more about new license requirements for Indiana teachers, I want to tell you about a show we did earlier this week about the theory that the RV industry can help predict recessions. We heard from an economist, an RV sales manager, and an IPBS reporter covering the story. You can find a podcast of that and all past shows at WFYI.org/all in. You can also find us on Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. Today, we're talking about a new requirement tied to teacher licenses in Indiana, one that requires career awareness training, has raised concerns for some teachers and school leaders around the state. As always, we're taking your questions and comments on social media. We especially want to hear from you if you are a teacher, a school official, or an employer who could bring teachers in for this kind of training. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. In the studio now, we welcome Doug Taylor. Doug is treasurer of the Indiana State Teachers Association and a teacher in the New Albany Floyd County School Corporation. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here. Thank you for including the teacher voice in this conversation.
Indeed. Happy to. And on the phone, we're joined by Scott Croner, superintendent of Wanee Community Schools, located about 30 minutes south of Elkhart. Scott, thanks for calling in.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you.
And just a note before we start, we did reach out to all 10 lawmakers who signed on to the bill and created these changes, and none of them said that they could make it on the show today. Doug, we'll start with you. Can you tell us about what you do and how long you've been teaching down in New Albany?
This is my 28th year teaching elementary kiddos, so usually 5th and 6th graders over that time. I'm active in the local teachers association there and thus active in the state association as treasurer currently. I've taught every grade in the elementary world.
Just as a quick aside, is the treasurer the hardest job? in every board that I've ever served on, the treasurer is the position nobody wants.
The treasurer has the most clearly defined activities as far as making sure the finances are handled appropriately.
We'll start with the basic question. What was your reaction when you first heard about this new requirement tied to teacher licenses to get career awareness training?
I felt insulted by it. It's one of those things that it's another additional piece that I have to worry about. I have been through the whole process for my last license renewal. I'll be doing this one again. When it came down all of a sudden, you know, it fits in the context of all the other things that have been going on with public education in Indiana over the last 10 years. I see this as just the latest insult in the whole process. If we go back, you know, the attack on our bargaining rights, the underfunding of our schools. There was a Forbes report last year that said that we were 51st in income growth over 10 years. 51st in the country, Indiana. So we are funding.
I'm assuming that's counting D.C. or something like that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's a Forbes article.
So it's bottom of the heap.
Yeah. We are at the bottom for income growth. And there are other measures, too, as far as how other states around us. We're behind in the region when it comes to funding public education, our per pupil expenditures. We just need to catch up, at least to what our neighbors are. My kids are worth as much as an Illinois student or an Ohio student or a Michigan student. I love and value my students, and I want them to get the best. And we are doing a disservice by chronically underfunding our schools.
This falls under the umbrella of what's usually called professional development. Can you give us a sense for what professional development is like for teachers in Indiana?
Well, what I have on my school system builds it in. We have collaboration and PD every Wednesday morning. This past week, we were working on English language learners, working on some vocabulary development in our content areas, those kinds of things. We had partnered with the local university, the Indiana University Southeast, and brought in one of their professors to work with our teachers over the last couple weeks. So we are working on those things. We also do district-level events as far as that goes. And I know the ISTA offers a conference in the fall and a conference in the spring where teachers select the activities they're going to go through. As far as the PGP process, it really does give autonomy for the professional to decide what they're working on. So when I went through my last one, I was very clear with my building principal, this is what I want to get better at. So I was able to choose an area of focus. I went to took a couple classes at IUS locally to help work toward that. So I built that program up so that then, you know, we agreed. We just made some agreement locally what it would take to get there. And so that's how it worked for me.
Are there other examples of how professional development has changed over the years in addition to this new requirement? How much more has been added on to the sort of professional development requirements for teachers over the years?
Over the years, our districts do a lot.
Okay.
I think our districts do a lot of development around the state. I know my district does a lot of development. We are, you know, involved in making sure one initiative is technology integration and how you're using that to engage students. And that's one of the pieces that my district is working on. We do a lot with reading. We do a lot with math. You know, the content areas, we really spend a lot of time. Now, I'm only speaking from my experience at the fifth grade level, but I know that this is happening. We building rigorous curriculum design units at the high school level and in our seventh and eighth grade. So I know that there's a lot going on where teachers are sharpening their skills to engage their students. And that's part of why this 15-hour requirement or 15-point requirement is – it takes that – takes my problem solving, my planning away from me saying I need to go be aware of careers when I live in the community, I work in the community, I interact, I have family that work at other places. So it's not as if I am unaware of the careers and opportunities in my community.
Let's go now to Scott Croner on the phone. Scott, you're the superintendent of Wanee Community Schools up north, and I'll start with the same question I asked Doug. What was your initial reaction when you heard about the new career awareness training requirement?
I think a little shocked. This one kind of flew under the radar. I know HEA 1002 is a large and massive bill, and one important portion of it that did right was they required some reexamination of the tests that teachers are required to pass in order to become teachers. But in speaking with our staff members, I mean, there was a little bit of shock. You know, how are we going to implement this? As Doug kind of alluded to, there's been just so many changes that have been pushed out of our state legislature, and really what's absent from it is any guidance on how to administer it or implement these policy changes so they're done effectively.
Were you aware of the changes coming as they were being talked about at the State House, or was this a surprise?
This was a surprise. surprised. It really, I'm not real sure how it flew under the radar. I have a group of colleagues, myself, and really our organizations, along with ISDA, they keep you pretty well informed of what goes on down at the State House during those months that they're in session. And it's a fast-paced game, and when they're a part-time legislature, legislating body, bills come and go really, really fast, and you know, things can be defeated one day, and then they get inserted as an amendment the following day, and there was just so many things. I think there were over 200 bills that they considered. I mean, they ended up passing 50 bills that had an impact on public education, so there was a lot to digest during that short period of time for us educators to try to stay involved and communicate with them and make sure they understood the implications of some of these policy decisions if they were to come into effect. But this was one that, quite frankly, just flew under our radar. I was not aware of it until I got some guidance from the Department of Education shortly after the legislative session on, hey, by the way, those professional growth plans that teachers are working on, you need to make sure they include the 15 hours of some form of career development or externship.
Well, we've heard about some schools getting around it by having teachers renew their licenses before a certain date. That date, of course, is passed. Did that happen in your district?
Absolutely. I mean, when I met with the union and we discussed it and you know, tried to come up with some. I mean, like many things, we know the intentions were good, and so we wanted to try to help and move this along to our teachers so they felt it as something that could be positive. They had to do the 90 hours of professional development anyways. There are a way for us to do it so that, you know, we implement with the legislator once and it's a positive thing for our kids. And really in that short window, we were absent of any great ideas. So we decided, much like a lot of other school systems, we'll just recommend, hey, let's get folks signed up and begin their professional growth plans now before the July 1st deadline. And that'll give us some more time to massage this a little bit and try to make sure it's done well.
I understand there was one example in your district about a teacher going on maternity leave. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was really an unfortunate result of this change. We had a teacher who went on maternity leave. Obviously, we were very excited for her, but you know, as Doug alluded to, in this climate of teacher shortages, maternity leaves are very, very difficult still. There used to be a period of time when there were some pretty good teachers that, you know, had not been hired yet. So you had some folks that could get some experience, and it was a win-win for everybody. But in this day and age, if you have a maternity leave, good luck trying to find a qualified candidate that's going to be able to fill that. I mean, we're struggling to find, you know, full-time candidates right now. But back to the original question, we had an individual who was in our community that actually had been a teacher, but had allowed her teaching license to expire. About 3 or 4 days before the start of the school year, she agreed, she wasn't really gung-ho about coming back, but knew our kids needed the assistance, so she agreed to come back, and within that short period of time, she did her CPR certification, she did her suicide prevention certification, and got those things all taken care of, and then got prepared to submit her license renewal and got held up on the 15-hour externship requirement. We got our heads together, started talking about, you know, what kind of opportunities, what kind of experiences she's had in the last couple years, and we were very, very fortunate. She's heavily involved in her church and had done a lot of business work in her church as a volunteer, so we were able to get a church to sign off on the 15 hours of externship, which I don't know if is exactly what the state of Indiana wanted, but it was enough to allow her to start teaching, and our students now have a wonderful teacher that's in that classroom. But that was, I mean, our hearts absolutely stopped when we heard about that, and that was obviously very frustrating for us.
Scott, you mentioned the teacher shortage. Doug, I'll come back to you. Jeff from Facebook writes, this is why Indiana has a teacher shortage. This wasn't even debated in the Education Committee. Teachers feel overwhelmed without this foolishness. Do you agree with Jeff?
Yeah.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. You know, we celebrated this past legislative session. I think we saw a 2.7% increase in educational funding in this state. And basically, what are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that we're finally keeping up with inflation for the next 2 years.
Agreed. I couldn't agree with you more.
And you know, what's real interesting on that same comment, you know, there wasn't any conversation. There was never any discussion that this was something that needed to happen. It was just, boom, it appears in this piece of legislation. Yet, on the same hand, we form a study committee to figure out, well, why aren't teachers getting paid more money? it's not real hard to figure out. As Doug alluded to, the last 10 years, you know, we've been 50th in the country in teacher raises. That just happens to correspond to when we implemented the property tax caps. And schools lost $300 million every single year due to property tax caps. And then during that same time period, the state never made up that gap in funding. And when they took over the general fund to fund all education, people need to realize they're not just funding traditional public education in traditional public schools. They're now funding four separate systems of public education. We have the traditional publics, we have the vouchers, we have the charters, and we have the virtual charters. So that pie is now divided four different ways. So not only do we lose the $300 million annually due to the property tax caps, now the pie that was there is being divided up more. And it's just interesting that we have to study that, whereas something like this scenario is just it's frustrating and it's disappointing.
Doug, I'll come back to you. What do you think of the idea behind this career training, setting aside the logistical concerns and the way it was rolled out? How valuable is it?
Well, if I have to choose on my plan between 15 hours of improving my instruction, developing trauma-sensitive instructional practices, responding to kids' needs better, and doing a job shadow, I think the choice educationally is pretty clear. The former activities are going to make me a better teacher in my classroom. So I don't support the career externship kind of thing just to have it. If we want to do a good job of presenting careers in our classroom, then that's some curriculum development. And you would involve educators from the ground up. You would involve local school administration, local school teachers in creating that awareness, creating a program to address that. So I totally agree with his description of what's been happening in Indiana over the funding, over the breakdown of things, but just involve the educator voice. Respect educators enough to know what should be happening in our classrooms.
Doug, on top of being a teacher, you're, of course, the treasurer for the ISTA, which we've talked about, the Indiana State Teachers Association. Do you know how involved the group was with this bill when it was at the State House?
I agree with the superintendent here that it was a surprise that it came through pretty quickly.
So it seems like no one was involved whatsoever.
That, as far as I do not have direct knowledge of how.
What do you think that the relationship, though, is like between lawmakers and teachers? Is there enough conversation about these kinds of things?
I think that we're seeing with the whole Red for Ed movement, if you've been aware of seeing walk-ins and other
You've got
activities.
The button on today.
I've got the button. So we are certainly growing our voice. I have seen it just from my local in our lobbying efforts in this last session, a great involvement of teachers across the experience spectrum. We came up for four or more days, and we brought a different group every time. It was really exciting to see people who are just expressing their needs. What do my students need? How can, I engage with the legislator and just let them know how what they're doing affects my classroom? So I think we're growing. Teachers are certainly growing in their voice in this, in their engagement with the community and with our legislators.
So let's go really broad. Before we close out, I'm interested in your thoughts on the whole idea of state laws mandating things like this. Doug, I don't think many people would dispute that it's good for teachers to get training, but how do you think requirements like this should come through state law, if at all?
I think the development should involve educators at the very beginning. If you're looking at trying to make a better elementary program, then you involve elementary educators or secondary educators. You involve them in what you wish to have happen. I do like the freedom or the ability to design programs that address the needs in my community, in my school, in my classroom. So I hope that as it goes forward that we could really convince the legislature and those who design these programs to listen to the educators, to bring our voice to the table at the beginning of the conversation so that we can really have some authentic involvement in creating programs that we can then go back and be supportive of. Because I know that when you push something like this on a group, And people will come up with interesting workarounds, but their heart isn't in it.
Scott, we have about 30 seconds. I'll throw the same thing to you. What role do you think the state should play in getting teachers professional development?
I would find it difficult for myself to try to speak to healthcare workers to explain to them what kind of professional development they should be doing. That's the reason why is I have no background in that field. I would say if legislators don't have a background in education, I wouldn't legislate. what kind of training needs to occur for teachers.
Scott Croner, superintendent of Wanee Community Schools, thanks again for joining us on the phone.
Thank you.
And Doug Taylor, teacher and treasurer at the Indiana State Teachers Association, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. Oh,
I thank you very much. And you've probably included more teacher voice in this program than in the creation of this requirement. So thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we'll talk about solutions. You'll hear my recent talk with someone at the South Bend Chamber of Commerce who says they can help make the process go smoother. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We've been talking about the career awareness training requirement for Indiana teachers renewing their licenses. We've heard the facts and some of the criticism so far this hour. Let's move to a good example of how it's being implemented with the help of the business community. Joining me now is Kate Lee, Director of Talent Engagement with the South Bend Regional Chamber of Commerce. Kate, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
We've talked to people who are concerned that teachers and schools have this new responsibility to take on to figure out exactly how to meet these career awareness training requirements. How has the Chamber of Commerce in South Bend been involved so far?
So we've done things even previous to this coming down out from the state, because we know that it's really important for our educators to understand the careers available in our region if we hope to retain our students here and make sure they have the education pathways that are available to them and they know what they are. And teachers and counselors are the right people to tell them that. So we had already started Manufacturing Day. This will be our sixth year for Manufacturing Day. But we had also planned to start educator externships. So it was just good timing on our part that we had received some funding through the Skill Up Grant from the Department of Workforce Development to put this into play with a pilot program this past summer. So, well, actually, summer's not quite over, but this summer. So we had researched systems across the country to look and see how other places have done educator externships really well. The state had done some things through the Department of Education, others in Indiana, but then in other places, and put together a format where we would have the educators come in. They would apply. We looked at specific educators who were teaching more the STEM focus, the counselors, those who would get the most reach. There was a number we found that says for every educator who's exposed through an educator externship, they impact 400 students. So we thought this is a great way to get the employer message to our students via our teachers. So we weren't sure what we would get when we put out the online application for the educators, but we ended up with 71 educators applying in St. Joe and Marshall County. We didn't have that many spots or the funding to do the stipends because we wanted to make sure that educators were paid for this work because we feel they are professionals and they deserve to get paid for even their education time. And so we had the funding to do 34, but we supplemented that. So that whole blending and braiding of funds that everybody likes to talk about, we supplemented that with some funding through South Bend Schools for their current tech ed instructors. So we were able to put 41 educators out into businesses in two cohorts over the summer. And the impact on the educators was very clear, but also the employers, to see what educators are teaching, learn what they know and how they can share that with if they can share that with an employer, it helps employers better know how to even train their existing workforce. So it was a win for everybody. I do think that it's a huge time commitment. And those are the kind of things when these things come out from the state, I think much of it is so well-intentioned, but I've been using a golf reference. It's like not everybody's playing the ball all the way through. So who is going to make this happen? Who's going to put together the plan, make sure it's consistent, meaningful for not just the educators, but also the employers, so that we can make a consistent and sustainable system, put that in place to make sure this can happen, not just for 41 teachers this summer, but maybe even more next summer. And how do we get that system in place? So just doing the R&D on that, putting together the written documentation, recruiting the teachers, recruiting the businesses, hours and hours of time at the chamber of trying to get that all in place, and completely worth that time. But all I could think the whole time we were doing it, and I work with someone else who was really helpful in running point on all of this, is if every school corporation had to try to do this, or if we asked every teacher to go find their own placement, the businesses would be getting hammered. You know, they'd be getting calls from different people. Not every educator has the ability to know which businesses they should be calling and setting that up, and the actual experience would be inconsistent. So I feel like when we put these things in place, they're well-intentioned, but we have to play it through and say, okay, so what would this look like, and how do we make sure that it's a beneficial experience for everyone and has the impact that in our mind we think it will have, but how do we get there after putting this in place?
It sounds to me like I would imagine that the educators in St. Joe and Marshall County really appreciate the help, because there's not a lot of definition from the State House on this. What's been your experience like so far making these connections? Has it been a challenge to get these employers on board?
Well, I would say always know there are some employers who are amazing because they are game to do anything. They will help out with education. They completely get how the dots connect from K through 12 education and post-secondary and to the workplace. They get that there are some people who are not going to go straight to post-secondary but come to work. They're the ones who participate in Manufacturing Day. They do CareerQuest and JobSpark. There are people who really get that. So they were kind of like the early adapters. And then we have these great educators who are good at making relationships, who are also incredibly generous. So we have an educator at a counselor at New Prairie High School who met the guy at Notre Dame Construction and talked to Tony about doing something with educators. And they hosted three externs the first session and four the second session. So now we have seven educators in St. Joe County who have been exposed to all the trades at Notre Dame Construction and seen all their projects in action. So they can go back and say to their classes, guess what I saw at Notre Dame this summer? You know how much you can make being a bricklayer, and somebody will pay you to learn that? Do you know how many carpenters? Do you know like what these needs are? So they came back and we had a sharing, like a wrap up at the end, where they came back and shared what they learned, and the enthusiasm. I mean, you could feel in the room the energy that these teachers got from really seeing and knowing that they're going to go back and tell kids, I saw your future, and if you want to do this, I believe you can. And that's pretty remarkable.
It sounds like you're really doing the work up there. I mean, do you think that if the State House were to come down and point, or come up, I guess, and point to the work that the Chamber of Commerce is doing and working with the education system up there, do you think if they were to come up and point and say, look what they're doing, you do it now, that you'd be happy to serve as that example?
Oh, for sure. And we already it's on our list of things. As soon as Manufacturing Day is over, it's on our list of things to do, is to put together kind of the step-by-step how we did it. Like, because we did have more applicants than spots, we had to develop a rubric, which we didn't think about in the beginning because we didn't know how many we would have. But we had to put together a rubric based on, you know, how many students it would impact, what classes they taught. We just looked at various things. So why should somebody else have to develop those tools? What about getting all of our best practices together? Everybody has to tweak things a little bit differently. I mean, we started Manufacturing Day in St. Joe County 6 years ago. We do high school students. We take high school students out on Manufacturing Day. Elkhart County kind of picked up our model, tweaked it to what they wanted to do, and they do eighth graders. So it looks different, but the basic core principles of it were already in place. So it just sped up the process of making things happen.
Yeah. It sounds like it was already there. And so you just you found out about this mandate from the state and you thought, well, this is a way that they could fulfill this requirement. And it's something that we're already doing.
Right. And I mean, we had planned to do this actually because I had heard about this through other chambers across the country who have done things like this and thought it was a brilliant idea. And so we had planned on duplicating this in our area, and it just so happened to coincide with what came out of the State House. So it was like a happy accident. The timing was really good. Sometimes that happens.
And speaking of other chambers, how feasible do you think it is for other chambers or other economic groups around the state to do what you're doing?
I think it's incredibly feasible. It is time intensive because you do have to manage the process, make all the matchmaking. I think if you're going to have thoughtful matches, so you're going to put the teacher of construction trades and make sure they have a construction option. Like, we had teachers who applied and they were like, oh, we don't have anybody in hospitality. So who can we contact about that? And who would be a better fit for the person who teaches, you know, just different classes? Like, you want to make sure that it makes sense who you send to manufacturing. And it was great because we had an educator who is going to be teaching an entrepreneurship class. And it's a new class for her to teach, and she teaches business. So she went to the South Bend Elkhart Regional Partnership and had the opportunity to learn about what's happening with entrepreneurship in our community, what's happening with industry growth, all the different pieces and parts that that economic development group was looking at regionally. So now she's going to go back and be able to share that with her students and have that. She made some relationships. And that's the other part that I think is really, this is like a first date, right? So these educators are meeting these business people that they would never meet in any other circumstance. So probably. So they're meeting and now they have potential speakers for their classroom and they have potential tours during the school year. And they can actually take the students to that website and actually talk about, you know, what they saw while they were there and the things they make and really have the full story because they've seen it. We even had one educator was at a manufacturer and he was brought to Chicago for a meeting they were having with some a manufacturing group, and they were talking about what they're doing as far as internal training. And it's a bunch of different manufacturers, not just the one here locally. And so they're talking about the training they're doing and that they were doing online training. And they were just kind of bemoaning the fact that like the staff wasn't getting it. Like it just wasn't clicking. And so the educator boldly raised his hand and said, you know, hey, so do you do any hands-on training with that? Do you then do applied learning to go with the online learning? And he said you could just tell that he was so proud that he had like put himself out there and said this, because they looked at him like, oh, you think that would be helpful? And he's like, yeah. So teachers know stuff. And so that didn't just help them, gave them a big aha moment, right? But it also, this educator was feeling really good about his job. And in a time when educators might not always be feeling really good about their career choice, because sometimes it's really hard, he felt good about what he does and that he was able to show those business people the knowledge they don't have, he was able to share with them. So I thought that's another great outcome that you could never have guessed was going to happen. It's like one of those things that just organically came from this. And I think there'll be more of that. If we can make this into a really robust, you know, regular featured programming, like if we can make this happen every year, then we really get this great group of educators who then can also share with each other what they learned. So I see huge potential in driving this forward. Of course, the trick is always having somebody run point on it who has the time, because this is not something I feel that can be done like on a volunteer basis. Somebody has to be all in, right? Somebody has to be running point on this. But it's way more efficient to have somebody like a chamber, economic development, whoever in your community is the right person to run point. You fund that person's position to run point, and then you don't have to fund or find the person that whose time you can extract in each school corporation. So that one person, you gain some efficiencies with that collaboration that I think are really important. And also then the employers aren't getting, you know, hit from every direction because everybody's trying to do it on their own.
So what you're doing up there is sort of a positive with regard to this new mandate. Frankly, though, what do you think about the way this was actually implemented and then written into law?
Well, I think that oftentimes there are really good intentions, and we know who our elected officials listen to. They listen to employers, because obviously economic development is incredibly important to our state, and employers are all clamoring for workforce. They're all saying people aren't coming to us prepared. I will tell you, I'm actually doing a presentation tomorrow. And it's so funny because I have a book that was, we found it in our house and we're not even sure where it came from. And so in 1911, there was a book that came out, and the chapter titles are they're exactly what we're talking about still in 2019. Huh. So one of them is like opportunities where you are, choosing a vocation, tact or common sense, raising of values. I love this one. On time, or the triumph of promptness. You know, they said it much prettier then, but it's like nobody's on time. That's exactly what they were saying in 1911. So I'm like, okay, everybody thinks it's new that we have this disconnect, but I would kind of argue that the disconnect always existed, but now with all the communication and everybody has a voice, right? And now employers are saying they're not prepared, they're not this, but everything's changing so fast. And our schools, our educators are doing the best they can, but they get more and more things heaped kind of upon them. If you look at the list of what's been added to teachers' responsibilities over the last 20 years, you're like, what? Like, they're responsible for everything now. And I think making sure they understand all the career options and can talk about them. I don't know about you, but when I was in high school, I don't think anybody, I think I might have taken a career class, but it's been a while. And I think we weren't talking about these things. There weren't as many options. Now there are kids starting high school this year who, by the time they graduate, there's going to be jobs created that don't even exist today. So everything is happening so fast, and employers are still expecting the education system, K-12 system, to be pushing out exactly what they need. But they can barely keep up with it internally. So I think we need to look at things in a way where we're all a team in this and know that everybody has a role to play and have realistic expectations. So when you do push it out, like, be thinking about, who is this going to impact? What kind of system would we have to really make this work? And is this going to put an undue burden on someone? Because even when we talk about employer-driven education, and we want employers to say what kind of certifications they need and all that, that's great and super important, because we want kids to be able to take what they are learning in school and apply it to the workforce and be able to support themselves, right? That makes complete and total sense. But employers have to do their part in that too, and they're super busy. So everybody's really busy, and we want them all to work together, and it just becomes a challenge. So nobody's going to mandate employers to be involved in Manufacturing Day or host educator externs or have apprenticeships. They're not going to be mandated to do it. Educators are mandated to do things, but the other side, the other part of the partnership isn't mandated. It may be in their best interest, and it's a great thing to do, and many understand that very well, but it's also not mandated. So they're not getting dinged by anyone if they don't do their part. All they get, their ding is they just don't have the workforce they need. For educators, they get dinged because they've been told, we expect this of you. So I think that's the challenge. Like, you can't mandate something and then not hold the other side responsible, because educators can't make employers do what they need them to do. Unless you're going to figure out a way to mandate that, like, I don't know what you're going to take away from employers if they don't do their part for education. But it takes a lot of time. You completely understand why an employer would be like, oh, I give up. I can't. There's so many things I could be doing. I already do college internships. I can't do an externship. And you have to respect that, because it's their time. But we don't have that same, I guess, respect for the educators and the school corporations, that they, when they say they don't have the time, it's just as true as an employer saying they don't have the time. So I don't know how we make that whole system work, but I'm sure it involves a spreadsheet and a pie chart, and we can figure it out.
Well, you're already doing a lot for educators and employers up there, and we appreciate your time today. Kate Lee, Director of Talent Engagement for the South Bend Regional Chamber of Commerce. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All In is produced by Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Our managing editor is Scott Cameron. Our technical director is Chris Flood. If you'd like a podcast of this show, you can find it and all past shows on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, NPR One, and WFYI.org. Jill Sheridan's in for me next week, and next time on the show, she'll be looking at the many options for addiction treatment amid Indiana's opioid crisis, some of which are under fire for using unproven methods. That's Tuesday at 1 p.m. I'm Matt Pelser, back in a week and a half. This is All In.